The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome to Free Fire Radio. And now, Free Fire Radio
is about to commence.
Good morning, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio right here on KCNR 1460 with Carl Bott and Trish Clark. Good morning. It's Thursday, and my Thursday girl's here.
Good morning. I just love Thursday morning.
I know you do. You came in looking with all your French T-shirt on. And
I only
turned
the alarm off twice.
You know, the French maid outfit, you know, that's kind of... Phone line's here, 530-605-4567, and we're streaming live at KCNR1460.com.
54 degrees in downtown Reading. We're looking for a high today of 93, a low of 60. And on Friday, we're going to be up to 98, getting down on Friday evening to about 62. And on Saturday, we're looking for a high again of about 98 and a low of 64. Sunny, 97. On Sunday, 97 degrees. So we're going to stick around in the high 90s through the weekend. The weather, as always, is brought to us by Shasta Gas Propane. It's cool to be a Shasta Gas Propane customer. They're locally and veteran-owned and operated. They give veterans and senior discounts. Give them a call at 365-3793.
Ooh, 64, 58. I tell you what, I walked out the other morning and stepped outside and went, oh, this is so good. You know, you want to just leave the house open and all that. But last night, a helicopter was flying around my house.
So you don't want to leave the windows open when the helicopter's flying around.
You know what? I'm out there with Elk Killer, and it was like about 9 o'clock last night, and it's usually pretty quiet in the neighborhood. You know, maybe an ambulance comes by. The house across the street has some older people in it, and you know, six or seven older people, and it's and every so often the ambulance comes in there to help them. I mean, the house itself is quiet all the time. But last night I could hear some guy, maybe a block over, screaming and yelling and obviously out of control. And I thought, but they were so, not that close that you could distinguish all the words. You could just hear what was kind of going on.
You hear the real strong epithets. Yeah, I had that last night, too.
Yeah, I mean, it was... Yeah,
I'm glad I live in Anderson. I don't have to listen to that.
No. Right. You just listen to gunshots, So it's because that's why you don't have any of the other things happening. Oh, you want to yell at the end of my street? Boom, 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 boom. Okay, yell now.
Nice, Carl.
Anyway, so I was thinking, well, that's the first time that's happened in a long time. And so, but you think about that. And then that leads me into the next story. And we talked about it yesterday, but it hits the paper today because we're always like a day ahead of the paper, at least sometimes a week. This other teen was harassed also down at one of the swim meets from Roseville. Her mom's from Roseville. And she has gone to the board and said, hey, Reading should be dropped from having swim meets.
Wow.
Unless they can control what's happening around her. Because her daughter makes a phone call, trying to make a phone call. This guy comes up, accosts her. She leaves. The guy follows her yelling. Other parents have to intercede. Meanwhile, he goes over and tears down the tents. They bring tents and all these things for the kids to rest in and all. He's knocking down tents. They have to hold him until the cops come. I mean, where have we gotten in our town that... you can't have a swim meet, and then if you look at the article, and then one of the people come to swim meet. Well, if they stay on the swim platforms, or not platforms, but in the swimming area, we don't have a problem. It's when they leave. But I mean, my gosh! But why should they? And they're saying they've had other families will go down to the river, look at the river, it's a beautiful river, and their stuff gets stolen. And so it's like, why? Why is this happening? What has happened? I'd hate to think it was I brought this with me when I came here 9 years ago. But then you sit here and you ask Rob, Chief Pelletti, I've still got seven people on duty. All right. So then you go to the city council. City council, who ran 2 years ago on law and order, it's gotten a lot worse. What have they done? This has got to be the most ineffective city council I've ever seen. I mean, they're really good at giving out raises, but what are
ordering
they doing
studies.
To, huh?
Ordering studies.
And ordering studies. Well, we're going to go for a tax raise. We really need this tax raise. What if it doesn't work? Because I tell you what, I'm seeing a lot of pushback on this tax raise because people don't believe it.
They don't have any confidence in the city council. And that, you know, when you get to a place in a community where every other word is, oh, well, don't bother taking it to the city council. You know, I built my career on tackling issues as they came to me and avoiding committees and study groups. I always said, you know, there's no reason to educate a bunch of citizens to do my job. And it takes so much more staff time. All they've done in the last 4 or 5 years since this thing has gotten big is study what to do with the homeless. The situation hasn't changed other than to get worse with more homeless.
You've got
But the reality is you've got to figure out a way to increase the economy, bring in jobs to put these people to work. There is a certain amount of the homeless population that would go to work if you could find them a job.
I understand it. But then we had somebody in here the other day that when she was talking to me, and they're trying to – they want to – and their heart's in the right place. You know, Terry Zanny, their heart's in the right place. But she said, you know, I've got people out there that if they go to work for McDonald's, let's just say McDonald's, $10 an hour. And that costs them money because they're on the, you know, because they're getting all this money from the state and the feds.
Well, that's it. And that's the
wait
problem.
A minute, and then they have to do things like they have to, you know, clean themselves up and they have to show up on time and all this. So instead of having a job and then offsetting that job with you know, funds to make ends meet, which to me is the way to do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you can, you know, okay, hey, I'm working a 40-hour week. I've got it's not enough for me to live in an apartment. So then, you know, at that point, instead of being on total Fed and state and local tax, you know, at that breast, we should have. Okay, you get a job, and then we'll help offset it. Yeah, and then we'll prorate stuff. But at least they're going to work every day.
But this has been the same situation we have dealt with since the 70s. When we got into welfare, they will sell your house, sell your car, go completely on the dole, and we'll give you everything. They will not supplement. They will not help somebody who's making a little bit.
Well, here's but
let's go back. These tax credits, we've got all this other stuff. What we're doing and what we're studying and what we're throwing money at enabling this population to continue to act like they are is not working. Mm-hmm. We need to start doing something positive to turn it around.
You know,
and the city council needs to stop studying it.
Well, here's something from the chat room. Let's order a study on what's wrong with our city council.
We don't need a study on that. We know what the problem is.
The daycare center is being touted as a fix-all. But Paletti had a great point yesterday. There are people who take it as a point of pride not to follow the rules. And you've got to have rules in a place like a daycare center. And there's a pretty healthy percentage of these people who will thumb their noses at the rules.
And so there are. Okay? But here's what I'm getting at. And you're falling into the same thing as I have. You're falling into the same thing the city council's doing. You're not trying things because, oh, what if? Oh, what if? Oh, this will happen. Why don't we put some porta-heads across from Library Park right here so they're not defecating in the bushes, they're not defecating at the vets hall in front of businesses. Oh, they'll just destroy them. Well, put them up and let's try. You're not talking about $1 million here. You're talking about a porta-head. Why don't you do that? Where are the ideas from the city council? You know what? When that lady got hit in the head, that 83-year-old lady got hit in the head. What happened? Missy met with the trails people. Oh, we need to go out. Oh, she traveled with groups of people. No. You hire North State Security or whoever it is, Retribution Incorporated, and you bring them in and start patrolling the trails. It's going to cost some money. Take it out of the reserves. It's not going to cost as much as hiring one policeman because all you're hiring is people being on that trail, being back and forth, a presence there. And Rob says, well, they just ignore it. They'll ignore them. They won't. If somebody's there trying to beat up somebody or to hurt somebody and the presence is there, they will stop. If you're talking about somebody, they're not going to be telling them, move on, move on. That's not their job. is to protect people on the trail. What is so hard about that, Trish?
Well, I concur with you. I absolutely concur. But and those are the kind of things they absolutely should be doing, trying some things that could make a difference.
We have to take a break.
We do have. It's a frustrating thing for everybody involved. I don't know what the answer is. I just know that.
Well, we're just sitting out
there
throwing hardballs at the people in positions of. Hey, you ran for office.
You need to keep trying something instead of just studying it.
Hey, you know what? You ran for office. You said you were going to fix it. You haven't. Well, guess what? Now it's time to hold your little feet to the fire. You know, is it getting a little warm? It should be. It should be. And when the people come on here that want to run for office, I'm going to, you know. So what are you going to do? How are you going to handle this? Give me some specifics. It is now September. You're talking about 80 days away from an election. So you should have some really good ideas about what you're going to do.
In that 80 days, you're talking 55 days away.
55 days from that election. I looked at it. Is it 55?
That's what I heard yesterday.
September, October. Oh, my gosh, I think you're right. But I'm not running for office. We'll be right back after these messages. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. Open 7 days a week, veteran-owned business that treats its people outstanding. Espresso Joe's, great coffees, drinks, loose coffees. I mean coffee by the pound and all this tea. Then walk next door to the finest tobacco emporium in Northern California. Great, great walk-in humidor. Tobacco and Brew, doing so much for our community. Open 7 days a week, 2143 Hilltop Drive.
If you are running your own business, you already know that if there are 1,000 items on your to-do list, you really have 3,000 things to get done. Success in business is in the details. You need help. Let the smart professionals at Five Star Bank help you take care of those financial details. Yes, smart people doing good business. Life is 10% of what happens to us and 90% of how we react to it. Be positive. Those at the top of the mountain did not fall there. Visit us at Five Star Bank and let us show you how we specialize in emerging business and commercial real estate. Five Star Bank also specializes in hard work, working hard for those that believe that success is just on the other side of the next opportunity. Thomas Jefferson was a great believer in opportunity, for he found that the harder he worked, the more he had of it. Your time is as valuable as your success. So visit us at Five Star Bank, 358 Hartnell in Reading, or call Eric Woodstrom at 223-6652. Online at fivestarbank.com. Five Star Bank. Professional, progressive, and personal. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
Holiday Harbor, we've got it all for you. But we're more than just great houseboats. We have the vacation you have been looking for without the drive or airport hassle. Fishing boats, patio boats, 47-foot party cruisers, wakeboards, jet skis, and stand-up paddleboards. If it floats or you can pull it behind a boat, we probably have it for your enjoyment. Visit Holiday Harbor, exit 695 of Interstate 5, or go to LakeShasta.com. Holiday Harbor, your own vacation in town.
When you need prompt, dependable transportation, you can count on Reading Yellow Cab. At Reading Yellow Cab, they have a deep commitment to serve the public and provide dependable first-rate service. Whether you're heading out for a night on the town, need to get to work, or you're just running errands, relax and let Reading Yellow Cab do the driving for you. Reading Yellow Cab is your number one choice for reliable, friendly transportation and clean, comfortable cabs. Give them a call at 222-1234. That's 222-1234.
Coming to the Cascade Theater, the annual global film festival you won't want to miss. Saturday, October 1st, 7:30 p.m. at the Cascade Theater in Reading. The screening of the 2016 Manhattan Short Film Festival. Tickets available at the box office by calling 243-8877 or online at cascadetheater.org.
Excitement is building for the 27th annual Ducky Derby presented by Reading East Rotary. Over $4 million given to this community. Adopt your duck for $5 and get in on the race for youth development and substance abuse prevention. 100% of the ticket price goes back to the nonprofit seller. Everyone wins. And you could be the winner of the grand prize, a houseboat vacation from Shasta Marina. Second prize is a San Francisco Giants weekend courtesy of Interwest Insurance. See you there September 25th at 1:30 p.m.
National news with a local view. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio, KCNR, 1460. With Carl Bond, Trish Clark. Good morning, Trishy.
Good morning.
60 degrees, going up to 93 today. It's a little bit warmer than it was yesterday. It's going to be up a little bit warmer for a couple days, and it's going to go back down again. I think we've broken the 100 hex.
Well, I hope so. And, you know, as long as it stays in the 90s and cools down so nicely in the evenings, I, quite frankly, didn't even have my air conditioner or the swamp cooler on all day yesterday.
Yeah.
Haven't had for a couple, 3 days, just because the house is nice and cool in the morning because I keep the windows open.
Yeah.
And then it just, you know, it's nice. Yeah. It's very livable.
Very livable.
If you keep under 100, we can all breathe and move. And
that's right. You don't have to worry about changing clothes twice a day.
There you go.
Hey, this portion of the show is brought to your buddy, the other Clark, Home Helpers. You know, you're looking for in-care home services, whether it's for a short period of time or for an extended period of time. Give Sharon Clark at Home Helpers a call at 226-8350. She handpicks the people that work for her. They have extensive background investigations. Every one of them is insured and bonded, all of this. And Sharon will come out and meet with you to see what kind of care your family needs. And this could be something as simple as one of our friends is, whose husband travels a lot, is having a shoulder operation. So there may be things that she can't do, and they'll stop by, you know, maybe do the cleaning around the house or do a grocery run or just make sure they're okay.
Fix the nails.
Yeah, had a sister-in-law that had a back surgery, and she was down. So she needed somebody there, at least once a day to go in and do some things around the house. But or if it's for long-term care, it's Sharon Clark, Home Helpers. Give her a call, 226-8350. Okay, Hillary's health. Tell me what you think about that. You're a woman.
Well, I think that...
Since this is obviously a sexist ploy by conservative men.
Exactly. You know, well, the problem with Hillary whenever you're talking about anything is you don't... No matter what she says, you think she's lying. Because she probably is. She's not going to tell you the truth about her health any more than she has about any other subject that we've talked to her about.
Yeah.
Very clearly, she is not in good health. There's been too many incidents where she's stumbled, she's fallen, she does weird things with her head, she doesn't know what she's talking about. There's a lot of scary stuff going on. And even in when they're reporting, at one point yesterday, I heard where the medication she was on was thyroid. I heard also at one time where she was on a blood thinner, where she was on...
She's on Coumadin. They did say that because of the blood clots.
But then the next thing that they said that she was on... They listed all the medications she's on. They left that one out and put in a blood thinner or a thyroid medication.
No.
And then the next one, it was a different set. I got to listen and I went, so what the heck is she taking?
Well, Coumadin for sure, because it's a blood thinner. Because as many people have, they get older, it stops the blood clots. And
but the point is, say it, stick with it, make up your mind what you got, and then stick with it.
Yeah, it is. And now the other thing too, but it was kind of concerned me that I saw, because you get the others. Oh, she's got this and this. In this one incident, she's speaking from a crowd, and then these protesters for Trump, started waving their. And it wasn't like they were charging the stage. She stared at him and immediately froze. Mm-hmm. I mean, didn't move. It was like her eyes got white, and she froze and was watching them. And this guy rushed up to her. One of her handlers rushed up to her and starts. He literally was patting her on the back, rubbing her on the back. It's okay. It's okay. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and she repeated what he said. And it was kind of like that was really kind of strange.
Is she having?
And then the other thing too is she fell and was knocked unconscious, right? Knocked unconscious, blood clot. And her doctor said, "Oh no, she's okay." But her doctor's not a neurologist. I mean, that would be the one. And then people say, "Well, what do you care about what kind of shape she's in?" I care because this is a really tough job. This is why I care about why you just don't put. You just don't put ordinary people into extraordinary jobs just because she's a woman or do you think she's due? Because this is, an extremely tough job. And you've got to be up and you've got to be able to face people. You've got to be strong all the time. And I can give you instances where they weren't and it wasn't and disasters have happened.
But very clearly, that her health is only one reason why she shouldn't be elected.
Well, yeah.
I mean, for heaven's sakes, the list is is so long of all of the reasons why Hillary Clinton shouldn't even be considered.
Well, I had somebody,
this woman should be in prison doing hard time and then for all of the things that she's done, and we're even considering her to go into the White House. She can't pass a security clearance, for heaven's sakes. How in the world can she be handling the top job in the nation?
She said she didn't have, you know, so here's the next group of leaks that are coming out now. Is she said she didn't know what that C meant. That didn't mean anything.
Oh.
But now they've got it. They've got on pages that she signed where she was putting the classic, you know, putting confidential on them, and she was using those same markings. So how could she not know it now and know
she
it?
She opens her mouth and lies fall out.
Well, maybe it's the fact is that she, her maybe she does forget these things because she has a neurological problem. I'm not saying that's
an excuse. Then she's had the same neurological problem for 40 years. The lady is just a hype. She's a liar. She opens her mouth and lies fall out. She tells lies when the truth would do better. I mean, she has stood in front of the American people and lied how many times?
Are you saying there's a lack of transparency here?
Well,
she's transparent as she can be. Everything she says tells us is a lie.
Jake Mangus and Tyler Whitlow, this is not a lie, are doing Caffeinate for a Cause. They're going to be at the 2221 Churn Creek location, I think right now.
Yeah, 7 to 9.
7 to 9. So head on down and head out to the airport. I guess at most all the Dutch Bros, they've got people out there. So make sure that you get out there. And
they're raising money for?
One Safe Place. Oh, wait a minute.
This one is for Turtle Bay.
Turtle Bay. This one's for Turtle Bay. Raising money for Turtle Bay.
Oh. They do these. You know, the Dutch Bros people just do so much in this community. They've really become part of the community.
Oh, no. Yeah. They're an integral part of our community. You know, what do you got? Chris and Aaron, you know, love it here. And, you know, when you listen to their story, it's extraordinary. You know, how they got going, how they got started with this. And now they're coffee barons. You know, up in Northern California, uh-huh. They're coffee barons. But they're kind of spreading out. You know, and he's, you know, Chris said here on the show one day, he said, you know, we've got these, you know, these here. I just would like to help other people have their own stores. And he has done that. He's helped other people have their own stores. And it's spread the Dutch Bro philosophy, mm-hmm. You know. But it's giving other people a chance, too, to prosper and to make a really good living out of this. So,
see, anyway. And we talked earlier, swing back to our original subject.
Right.
We need to be enabling people to make a difference in their life. Spend more time rehabilitating these people in a positive manner. Pick out the ones that you can make a difference with.
And let's do it.
And do the things like we talk about with the EDC and their incubator out there. All these things. There are a lot of really positive things that we can turn these people on to and get them started with. Instead of spending all of our time studying what to do about the population.
And then we have even more problems. Hey, something big did happen. Brian Daly. Our assemblyman mm-hmm. has been pushing and pushing, and in his own subtle way of shoving people and helping gathering consensus here. Senate bill, you know, he's assemblyman.
Yeah.
This is the other part. Senate bill 859 goes to be signed by the governor and gives biomass energy a boost. It gives them the same incentives as solar and wind under law.
And that's
so
huge.
Now PG&E and all these other companies can buy and get these same. So it get the same incentives. Now, why is this huge? It's not just big for people up here in Northern California. The forest, California forestry and the feds are all saying the same thing. They've got hundreds of thousands of acres of trees that have been burnt or beetle the beetle disease, mm-hmm. which has killed millions of trees, is out there. Now, so these trees are just tinder for these huge fires. They need to be dropped, and then if they have the incentives, which means they can sign the contracts with people, which means then they can hire the people and get the trucks up and do all this, they can take down all of these dead trees, bring them to these biomass energy plants, and use the energy out of it, and it's sustainable, and
it counts towards our credit.
It counts towards our credit.
The problem with we built these cogeneration plants, and then fuel got so expensive, they were having to buy stuff to burn to create the electricity.
Right.
We've been doing that for years. It makes no sense because the cogeneration didn't count towards the incentives
That's
for
right.
clean air.
And now
it this
does.
Is huge.
This is huge up here. And if you've got a trucking company, this could be really big because if this thing starts, they're going to be trucking lumber from all over the place down to these biomass plants. And where do we have a big one? Right down here in Anderson.
Yes, we do. And, we've got a couple of them.
We've got a couple
Sierra
of them.
Pacific's got one, and Wheeler Brader has a huge one.
Has that huge one.
Yeah.
And you know what? This is gets rid of all the tinder that's out there in the woods.
And creates clean electricity.
There you go. And you can get incentives for it. Absolutely. You know what, Brian Daly?
That's
now,
it.
Here's a guy that is one of us that put, you know, that showed everybody how it can work. He brought people up to Bernie, and he, you know, like when they're talking about this, the bill about, you know, so they're going to charge you for the mile you drive, vice, mm-hmm. you know, vice gas mileage, you know, get the gas tax. He brings them up there, and he said, well, okay, let's go down, like I'm going to get a subscription or a prescription. Drives them 50 miles one way, got to pick up that prescription, drives them back 50 miles, and going, you're kidding, right? You know, you could have gotten to someplace else. No.
Yeah.
No. Nope. This is it. This is the only place I could get it. And they're like, oh my gosh.
They see they don't get it. I admire Brian a lot because he's the first one we've had in a long time who really understands the North State and didn't change a minute he hit Sacramento city limits.
He came in after the first 6 months and he goes, and he looks at me and he says, they're crazy down there. They're really crazy down there. And he says, no, I'm not giving up. He says, but they're really crazy down there.
You know, I had a conversation with him because he said he was sitting in a room and he was talking about, he said, you know, things that he and I dealt with when we were both on the Board of Supervisors. He said, I'm talking about, well, you can't do that because that money was already taken away under Prop 72, or Prop 172, and I was talking about this. And, you know, when the state took over the property taxes, and he said, I'm looking at a room full of people. I'm looking at like a bunch of deers in the headlights. He said they had no clue what I was talking about. No institutional memory with the term limits that we've put in. He said I was talking about things that these people had no understanding of whatsoever. And they're the people that have been elected to make these decisions.
Yeah.
They don't even know where the money's at or where it's coming from.
Okay, let's do a quick one because we got to take a break here in a minute. Ron, good morning. Ron, good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
I just heard you talk about, Brian Daly got it opened up so they could go in and cut for the biomass plants. Maybe he's already done it, but I don't know anything about it. But I wonder if maybe he couldn't open it up so people that have wood stoves and fireplaces and stuff could get a permit and also go in and cut some of that wood, because there's a lot of people that would, I would do it, and I got friends that would do it, that would go in and cut the wood for themselves for firewood for the winter. So anyhow, that's what all I've got to say. And so anyhow.
Okay, well, that's a good idea too.
Thank you for your show.
Well, thank you very much, Ron, for listening.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be right back. Carl Bott and Trish Clark, we've got we have another special guest. Now, at 8 o'clock, Mark Thompson, Benghazi whistleblower, testified in front of the Senate and the House Intelligence Committee and the Benghazi Commission, will be our guest. And wait till you hear what happens to a man that tells the truth, what the government will do to him. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. There's a joke around our company that our propane is better than other companies' propane. The fact is that most propane sold in the North State is manufactured in the same refineries in the Bay Area, so there's really no difference. However, there can be a big difference between propane companies. When you call Shasta Gas, you will be greeted by a friendly, knowledgeable customer service representative that will answer your questions or concerns and even give you an approximate time that your delivery will be there if you need to know. If you want, you can also talk to the owner, me. There may also be a big difference in prices between companies. Our motto at Shasta Gas is our customers are warm friends. So for safety, service, and savings, and to experience this difference, give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
true rock and roll legend. Eddie Money live in concert. Friday, September 16th at 7:30 p.m. inside the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center. Come see Eddie Money perform his timeless hits such as Baby Hold On To Me. Two Tickets to Paradise. I Want To Go Back and Take Me Home Tonight. Not only can he write, sing, and play, but he's a natural performer. Tickets for this sensational show start at just $20. Ask any concert goer, and they'll tell you that he retains his signature style and performs with passion. This will be a sellout event, so get your tickets now. Eddie Money.
Eddie Money.
Live in concert at the Wind River Resort and Casino Event Center, September 16th. For tickets or to reserve a room in our luxurious hotel, call 1-800-280-YOU-WIN or log on to windriver.com. Must be 21. To attend. Concerts are better at the river.
Hi, I'm Barry Tippin, Director of Reading Electric Utilities. On September 13th, REU will launch our 2016 solar rebate program. We have approximately $2 million available. REU's 2016 solar rebate will be 50 cents per watt up to $5,000. If you are considering solar, call REU first at 339-7200 and talk to an REU solar advisor. For more information, visit us at reupower.com or stop by our office. REU and you. Powerful together.
Obtaining a home loan is easier than ever with me, John Whitmarsh from Access Mortgage. We know how to say approved. I promise to make your home purchase or refinance a smooth experience. So call me today at 945-9660. Let's get you into your dream home.
Access Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS number 1096314.
National news with a local view. KCNR, 1460 AM.
Welcome back to Street Fire Radio on KCNR 1460 with Trish Larkin, Carl Bond. It is 24 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock, and Trish, what's the weather look like?
It's 60 degrees in downtown Reading now. We're looking for a high of 93 today, and then kind of in the high 90s the rest of the week. And the weather's always brought to us by Shasta Gas Propane, 365-3793.
Well, Gate Sports Club is sponsoring this portion of our show, located on the corner of Eureka and Court Street. Indoor swimming pool, saltwater swimming pool. Absolutely fabulous place, clean. They has every type of workout equipment you can imagine. I mean, no, really, any kind you can imagine, including all the free weights you want, spinning classes, yoga classes, Bohem spas in there. This is absolutely the finest place you're going to see to work out at probably Northern California. That's how good it is. Wellgate Sports Club. Give them a call at 768-1205 for the different classes they have, or just stop by, walk in, and talk to Rich or any of the people there. You're going to be glad you did. Hey, we're here with Terry Oxley, who is the pastor of True Life Church out in Bella Vista. Good morning.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Not too often we have people from the church in here.
Yeah.
Without first, you know, throwing, you know, a bucket of holy water in the studio. You know, so
that's okay.
But you look like you can handle yourself here.
Yeah, I think I can. Oh, by the way, free weights, they're not free. I walked into a place one day that advertised free weights, and as I was leaving with a handful, they stopped me. Not free at all.
I know, I should have, you know, I saw that one coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Terry, you used to be a policeman.
Right.
And
right.
But then the calling, I guess, hit you?
Yeah,
really. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I was a Portland police officer. And I worked in Portland, of course, North Portland, for the majority of the ministry, which is a pretty tough time in the North Portland area. And I was doing that and enjoying it and for at least 10 years. And then one day I really felt like I had the call to go to ministry. I was ministering on the street anyway as I was working, and the leadership didn't like that too much. They thought I should be policing, and of course I thought I was. But I went off to school to get some training, took a leave of absence. Thought I'd come back and just continue on with a little bit more Bible education, and instead never came back. And it's been starting churches ever since, and started some churches, and basically ended up here in Bella Vista, a little church called True Life Church. It used to be called Family Faith Christian Center.
How long have you been there?
Been here 11 years now.
Whoa.
I know. Tell me about it. First time I got here was amazing. It was we got here on the 1st of August, but it's just been 11 years, and it was 115 degrees. And my wife said, "No, why did we come here?"
You know, I remember that discussion.
Man, I tell you.
You had that little sign that said, "Welcome to hell."
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
And,
so what have you seen in the last 11 years here, Terry?
Well, I tell you what I've seen overall is I'm very much into watching things, and I believe that Christians and pastors especially should be involved in politics. I don't believe the part that pastors should keep their mouth shut from the pulpit. I don't. If you come to our church, you're going to know what I believe. You're going to know who and what I don't like going on in our society. I'm not afraid to say, I think Hillary Clinton's a liar and shouldn't be where she's at. And it just doesn't bother me to do that. Now, I can't do that and say True Life Church says this, but I can say I say this.
Because then you get into this nonprofit, that you can't do all these things there's like a whole list of things you can't do, but at some point, I think churches who have that believe have a duty to talk to their members.
Oh, absolutely.
This is not what True Life Church says or the Catholic Church says or this mosque, but they have a duty to talk to their member.
Right.
From a person that they trust enough to listen to every week.
Right. You know, and I believe that, the early pastors of this country were very much involved in helping to establish the constitutions that we have. Many of them were the ones that wrote a lot of it because they were the educated ones at that time. And there was a thing called the Black Robe Regiment, and they were very much involved in politics. And, it's the Johnson Amendment that really tried to interfere with us when Mr. Johnson said that...
this Lyndon Baines?
Yeah.
Okay.
Said that you could not, 501c3s could not be involved in politics and stuff like that. But that wasn't even done for churches. It was done when somebody he was trying to quiet. But ever since then, I can remember early, I used to get letters all the time from this separation of church and state, reverend so-and-so that I don't know who he's a reverend of, but I used to send back a little letter saying, go stick it somewhere, because I don't believe it.
And that isn't true at
it's
all.
It's not true.
I mean, it's not in vain stretch of the imagination. Are you acquainted with Pastor Royal Blue?
Yeah, I know him, and I've talked to him before, but we're not what I would call...
Because he kind of wasn't in still churching when you got
right.
Him. Royal used to be one that had no compulsion about speaking his mind, specifically during the elections. I mean, he was there,
absolutely,
right there, and would speak out about the good candidates, and he took the time to interview all of them and talk to them, and he knew who was running and what they stood for, and he would get on the pulpit and tell his people, all right, the election's coming, get registered, and this is who you're voting for.
Right. Well, I don't tell people who to vote for, but I when Obama came and he was on, I researched him. I said, this guy's not a Christian. No way in the world he's a Christian. If you're a Christian, you cannot believe in the way he believes, do the things he does, vote the way he votes. And so it doesn't take a brain to know these things. You just have to look it up.
Yeah.
Same thing with Hillary. Same,
But there's also a lot of other people in politics you could say that about. I mean, of course, Hillary's running for president and Obama is president, but is Trump a one that follows the Bible?
Well, we don't know enough about him other than what he has said. And
I mean, does he attend the church anywhere? Has he ever said he did?
Well, yeah, he has said he does. But I do like what he's gotten together with other Christian leaders that feel comfortable with what he says about himself. I like the fact that he believes in the Second Amendment, which I thoroughly do. You get rid of the Second Amendment, then the first follows.
Exactly.
And that's just it. And they're already trying to shut pastors up by everything we see right now. They don't want me saying what I say. They don't want me saying I'm not going to marry a homosexual couple. And I'm just not going to. If they drag me to jail, great. I'll preach in the jail.
I don't think they can do that to pastors, though.
Not right now.
Carl.
No, I'm saying. Problem. No, I mean.
I mean,
no,
can they? They can't. They're they doing can't, a lot and, of things they can't do under
there,
our constitution.
Yeah. There are, but, and I understand that, and trust me, I'm on your side on this. But they can't do that. They cannot force a pastor to marry people of the same sex. There was a time that you could actually say, hey, look, my religious beliefs mean something to me. I'd really not going to bake a cake for you. And I didn't realize is that the government would take you down.
Right.
Well, how about the clerk?
Yeah.
Christian Clark,
yeah.
Who said, I'm not marrying.
Yeah. And, you know, it's getting worse and worse, and the further they can push it, the further they will push it.
Exactly.
And, you know, I believe that everybody should have a right to say yes or no. You know, and what they tend to do is they, in order to do this thing called political correctness, and all political correctness is a manipulation by those in who are involved in political correctness to try to get you to believe in an alternative truth. In other words, I believe in an absolute truth. When God says don't do this or do this, okay, I believe it. That's it. They want you to not believe that anymore, but believe another truth. You know, in other words, okay, if you believe that way, you're a hate monger, you're a racist, you're a bigot, you're a homophobic, you're an Islamophobic, you're a xenophobic, you're any of these things.
And you're in that bucket of deplorables.
You're in the bucket of deplorables, and I am really an overflowing bucket of deplorable, I guess, because I won't be manipulated by political correctness. In fact, when I go places, oftentimes if I have an opportunity, I will deliberately be in correct, you know, because I just I
dude,
just
I don't know anybody that's that strong on not being politically correct. You know, Carl.
I think the people up here are probably looking at it a lot different. I know there have been times, and I guess I'm guilty of this, that I've started to say something and thought, well,
yeah,
I'm not going to say that now. It doesn't mean to change my beliefs or anything like that. I think what we end up having, though, and this is also in the business community and other things, is if you speak your mind about certain things like Measure D. I mean, I've had several businessmen tell me, I'm not going to say anything, because if you do, you know, oh, you're against being having a safe town. And then you get into these other things where if you disagree with Obama, it's obviously because he's,
you're racist.
You're racist on
yeah.
it instead of and I've never been called that. I mean, I worked in the early 70s, on the civil rights campaigns and going down in Georgia and all that. And I've never been called a racist before for something I believed. Like, I don't believe in the Middle Eastern policy. Does that make me a racist? Does it make me a sexist because I think Hillary has lied and she doesn't pack the weight to be president?
Changed. You know, and definitions, I don't think so. Definitions have changed, like being tolerant. Tolerant used to mean, okay, you believe your way, I'll believe my way, and we'll still be friends.
Exactly.
Now it doesn't mean that. It means you either you have to believe my way and celebrate it with me.
Exactly.
That's tolerance.
That's exactly right.
Okay, so tell us where the True Life Church is.
Well, True Life Church is down 299, you know, like you're going out Bella Vista,
right.
Bernie, and you get to Deschutes Road, right there where Mighty Fine is, which was one of your
Mighty
your
Fine
folks.
Foods, right.
Great place, and turn right there, go about a block and a half, and we're on the right.
And, well, I know where you're at.
Yeah.
Because then you can make that turn and head. Go back toward the Redding Gun Range in that area.
Yeah, you turn just before you get to us, and there's a Vic's boat repairs right next door to us. They came in a few years ago.
So you've got more room for people in there?
Yeah, we do. You know, it's interesting because every place I've been able to build a church and grow a church. And Bella Vista's just been a different ball game. It's a small community, and people don't want to go. They don't think, I don't need to go all the way out to Bella Vista to find a church, or they'll go all the way in to Redding to find a church. Well, we have a nice little church out there, and we really do. I don't just do politics. I preach the word. I believe in being really specific, and this is what the word says. We have the most loving group of people I've ever pastored in my life, and I've been doing this for 30 years. These people are just great.
Cool. Yeah. Okay, so what time are the
10 in the morning on Sundays.
In the morning
and Wednesdays we have like a Bible study. We sit around and we tables, drink coffee, and talk about certain Bible topics and stuff like that.
And what? How do they get a hold of you?
You can call us at 549-5660 or our website, which is TrueLifeReading.com. True Life Reading.
We're sitting here with Terry Oxley. He's the minister out there, and he. Believes in preaching the gospel and preaching the Lord's word, but also not pulling any punches with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Terry, thanks a lot for being here with us.
You're welcome.
All right.
Thanks for
We'll be right back after these messages.
Hi, I'm John Scape, owner of Properties by Merit. We specialize both in residential and commercial real estate. Whether you're looking to buy or sell, call us today at 338-2112. At Properties by Merit, we help your real estate dreams become reality. Visit our website at pbmerit.com or call today 338-2112.
Properties by Merit is California Corporation licensed by the California Bureau of Real Estate. California BRE license number 019-45816.
Hi, this is Linda Bott. Like many working women, I have a hectic schedule. My daily radio show, stage performances, and time with Carl leave almost no time to focus on myself. And I know a lot of us are in that same situation. We need me time to maintain mind, body, and spirit. And that's where Wellgate Sports Club really shines. I love the aquatic training program at Wellgate Sports Club. Kathleen Cowling's Aqua Aerobics focuses on cardiac training through water resistance and buoyancy that features safe, low-impact movements. Wellgate Sports Club's saltwater pool is a unique way to get back to my body, feeling muscle groups grow stronger. Kathleen at Wellgate Sports Club helped me to find my new limits, and they can help you too. Call Wellgate Sports Club today at 768-1205, or you can check out schedule information online at wellgatesportsclub.com. At Wellgate, self-care is the best form of health care. Wellgate Sports Club, Eureka Way at Court in Reading.
Tri-Counties Bank presents World Class. While volunteering overseas, the Hollies needed cash quick to help their daughter's family close the deal on a great home buying opportunity that was about to go south. The Hollies reached across the globe to Tri-Counties Bank senior banker Kylie McDonald for her world-class expertise. Kylie mapped out options and called the Hollies with a plan to get cash from a new home equity line of credit on their own house to help their daughter with her new house. Kylie's team jetted through the approval process, leaving no detail behind, and the Hollies had the funds just in time to close the new home deal for their daughter's family. Now that's service without borders. Home equity lines of credit, home mortgage loans, world-class response. For personalized problem solving, switch to Tri-Counties Bank. Tri-Counties Bank. Service with solutions. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender. NMLS number 458732.
Remember your past by celebrating it today. The Reading Rancheria Stillwater Powwow 2016, September 30th through October 2nd at the Shasta District Fairgrounds. Celebrate with beautiful dancers, powerful drummers, and the history of our people and land. Proudly sponsored by Reading Rancheria and Wind River Resort and Casino. The Reading Rancheria Stillwater Powwow 2016, September 30th through October 2nd at the Shasta District Fairgrounds. Brought to you by this station and other great sponsors. For information, call 225-8979 extension 1111 or visit stillwaterpowwow.com.
I'm ready.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Carl Bott and Trish Clark, it's Thursday, the 15th of September. It's about, 8 minutes before the hour of 8 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, we have a Mark Thompson on. Retired Marine officer who was in the State Department and was handling their counterterrorism desk when Benghazi went down. When he testified in front of the committee about what he had seen and observed, he was immediately castigated by the State Department for telling the truth. And wait till you hear the story. Well, first of all, you're going to hear about Benghazi from what he was observing. But then you're going to hear what happened to a guy that was one of those poster Marines and told the truth and what our government did to him. And, I mean, it's just going to be one of those things that you just sit there and you go, you know, it's and because, as you know, the Obama administration is famous for going after people. You know, much more so than anybody else.
I know. Hey, I look at my door all the time. I just keep waiting for it.
Hey, this portion of the show brought to you by Four Winds Jewelry, 2225 Hilltop Drive. This is where Trish goes down every time she gets a chance.
I do. Great estate jewelry and wonderful bargains and just a great collection of turquoise and wonderful, wonderful, beautiful setting.
Absolutely. 2225 Hilltop Drive, open Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 4. Great people down there. And the only trained watch repairman in the whole area.
If you have a broken watch, it's going to end up there anyway, so you may as well take it in.
We grabbed Terry and kept him here, not to talk about religion, but to talk about his other love of life. The Single Action Shooting Society, the men and women that they kind of take a step back into the 1800s and you dress up like the old cowboys and cowgirls and you have shooting contests using that period type, not
that age, but that period type of firearm. Is that right?
It's a ball. Single action is, you know, instead of having you pull the trigger and it shoots, you have to cock it and pull it. And then we use a Winchester. I use a Winchester 73 and a side-by-side shotgun, often called stage gun.
Uh-huh.
Or coach gun.
Coach gun.
And it's a ball because you have metal targets you're shooting at. You're timed. If you miss it, that's 5 points, you know, and if you it's a ball. And the fun thing is it's all ages. One of our champions is 80 years old, and he's won world champions just recently, and he's still pop. But it's a ball. I mean, you wear your cowboy guns, you wear your holsters, and you feel like, man, I wish I...
They have these big meets, too, or these big, I guess it would be like, you know, some of the areas down in New Mexico. All these people from all of the United States, well, the world, I guess. Come in.
Yeah.
And they're dressed in their cowboy regalia, but they're pushing this cart, and in this cart is like three or four long guns and ammunition and all the stuff they need as they're kind of perusing. But they're all dressed like that, and then there's people in the town that they have. They're all dressed like that's the whole thing.
That's the whole thing.
And then you have scenarios that are built from.
Right.
Like from Tombstone. You remember when Doc Holliday and Kate. When he was in the shootout but he stabbed the guy at the beginning of Tombstone. I saw one of those on TV where they built it like that so that you had to compete in that.
You have moving,
like
you
the
have
Civil
moving,
War reenactors.
Yeah, it is similar. You have moving targets. You have pop up targets. You have all these things, and you have to shoot. Sometimes you have to run, get and shoot. It's fun, and it's something that I've been shooting ever since I was a cop, and I enjoy it. But I get really sick and tired of shooting at a piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
This is fun. And you have to reload or should reload because you're using a lot of bullets and you don't want to load the full load. So, but we're also getting ready to start a thing called fast draw, cowboy fast draw, and there you use a 45 and you draw and you hit a target and it lights up and that's a lot of fun too. And some of the guys that are winning the championships are doing it in like 0.3 of a second. So not even a second, not even a half a second, a third of a second.
And I've seen that. They've got special rigs they're drawing with, and their guns are set up a certain way, right?
Well, there's certain requirements you have to have. They can't be cocked. The holster can't be too cocked to
the degree.
Yeah, right. I think it's like 14 or 15 degrees.
Yeah.
And you can't pull it out before the light goes off. But it's fun. But you cock it on your way out. And you shoot it right here by the holster, by the hip. And
now,
messes up your
let's
shirt.
Let's go back to the 1800s when we talk about these gunfights. So you get a guy in here that can draw on a third of a second and shoot, hit something from 10 feet away. I mean, and they hit it from 10 feet away and shooting. Okay, so he walks into town with his outfit on. He's got his rig set up like that. Nobody else does. And so as he walks by, he's kind of like, I'm waiting. So what really happens is this cowboy walks into the back door of the shotgun and hits him in the back with two barrels of buckshot.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, hey, so, I won that one.
Yeah.
I mean, the old type of shootouts. I mean, there were. I mean, you had the shootout at the OK Corral. I mean, that was kind of like the epitome of the cowboy western.
But it didn't happen a lot like that.
It didn't happen a lot like that. But. You know, I think what you do with this is single action shooting society is just great. How do people get involved with this? I mean, when you see it, because you put on, I mean, it's relatively inexpensive, also compared to like if you're getting into other shooting sports.
Once you buy your guns and your holster, that's the expensive part. The guns, you're looking at $550, $600 for like a Ruger single action a piece. You need two guns. Your rifle depends upon what you get. If you get a Winchester 73 like mine, you're looking at $1,200, $1,300.
But you can get them cheaper than that.
You can get different brands like a Marlin and stuff like that. The side by side you can get pretty inexpensive, $550, $600. Your holster rig, you can go anywhere from down at the store to a good rig that'll cost you $400, $500. And,
you can't just kind of like put it in your belt, huh?
No.
Can't put it in your sash.
You're liable to shoot your little things off that you have.
You can't put it in your sash like Wild Bill Hickok did.
No, you're liable to shoot yourself. But, and it's a very safe sport, too. So we're very much. But it's a ball. It really is. And you can go to sass.net. Sassnet.net, I think it is. Sass.net or sass.net. And look it up and find out wherever you live. We have two around here. I shoot in Yreka. There's another one here in Redding that shoots also in Bernie. both great groups, and it's just a lot of fun. And you get to dress up like a cowboy.
Okay. How do people? Is there any phone numbers they can call?
Have it off the top of my head.
Okay,
if they call me, I'll lead them in the right direction.
And what's your phone number?
549-5660 is the church. Leave your number if I'm not there, and I'll call you back.
The other thing too is you probably go online to Single Action Shooting Society, Redding, California. They're going to take you to there.
Yeah, Single Action Shooting Society and go to the headquarters because there's a map there. You press it where you live.
There you go. Now, you know, and I've seen them out there at the Redding Gun Club, and they look like they're having a super time out there. Yep. They have saloon girls.
Well, we don't have saloon girls too much.
I'm trying to help you, man.
Yep, okay.
Okay. Hey, we'll be right back with Mark Thompson, Benghazi whistleblower.
KCNR, Shasta Redding.
News this hour at townhall.com. I'm Bob Agnew in Washington. Ignoring threats of a presidential veto, House Republicans are standing their ground, voting to stop the transfer of detainees from the prisoner camp at Guantanamo Bay.
The bill's sponsor, Indiana's Jackie Walorski.
It's an unfortunate reality that our president remains willing to continue putting a misguided campaign promise ahead of the national security.
New York's Gerald Nadler says the bill makes a mockery of the American Constitution.
How can an American legislative body pass a provision that says we will hold someone in jail forever, not only without trial, but even if we have determined that he is innocent of everything?
The Obama administration says 20 of the remaining 61 detainees at Gitmo have been thoroughly vetted and cleared for transfer.
And that report from Capitol Hill correspondent Wally Hines. Vanderbilt University's campaign to support the use of so-called pronoun etiquette for so-called transgender individuals has now been called a form of cultural Marxism, that criticism being levied by one of the school's own law professors. Stocks have been mixed in early trading after finishing modestly lower. Investors are analyzing today's reports on things like retail sales and producer prices ahead of next week's Federal Reserve policy setting session. The government says retail sales were down by 0.3 points in August, even online at catalog sales, normally strong, registered a slippage last month. U.S. producer prices were unchanged.
The Labor Department says its producer price index was flat in August, following a 0.4% decline in July. Core inflation, which excludes the volatile energy and food categories, showed a modest gain of 0.1%.
That's Jeremy House reporting. Donald Trump says he's 70 but feels half that age. Dr. House says he's seen Trump's latest physical.
It was a comprehensive summary of a battery of tests, some of which occurred last week.
Appearing on NBC's Today Show talking about Trump's health. Hillary Clinton back on the campaign trail after a few days off with pneumonia. More from townhall.com.
Do you have a family member who's getting older and can no longer be safely left alone? With Visiting Angels, America's Choice in Senior Home Care, your parents and older family members can continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Experienced, compassionate caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meal preparation, and light housework up to 24 hours per day at affordable rates. To restore your family's peace of mind, call Visiting Angels toll-free today at 877-374-LIVE or at visitingangels.com.
It started at Bunko Night. A little tickle my throat, says Sandra. Then comes Colin barking like a seal. That cough, that's the flu. And then it spreads to Edna, to Wiley, to Marjorie. But when it comes to your door, you won't be answering because you got your flu shot at Rite Aid, where they care about you and your health. So while they're seeing doctors and sweating through fevers, you'll be teaching your granddaughter the two-deck shuffle. Shield yourself at Rite Aid before it's too late. If you're over 65, the CDC recommends flu and pneumonia shots. No appointments necessary, and they're free with Medicare Part B. Rite Aid. With us, it's personal. Flu vaccines available while supplies last. Age restrictions apply in some states. See pharmacy for details.
Julia has weakened to a tropical depression off the coast of Georgia and South Carolina. Charleston resident John Bolt says all the wind and flooding did catch him off guard. He explained to WCIB-TV.
It's been a complete surprise. Rain was going sideways. My umbrella almost blew me across the county. So it was a bit of a surprise, but hey, what's wrong with a little bit of excitement?
Well, a little less excitement on the way from what's left of Julia, according to Michael Brennan at the National Hurricane Center.
Julia's weakened to a tropical depression overnight. It's now centered about 60 miles south-southeast of Charleston, South Carolina, with maximum sustained winds of about 35 miles per hour. Right now, Julia is drifting slowly off toward the east at about 2 miles per hour.
And the storm is expected to continue meandering for the next few days, dumping rain but not posing any major threats. The new tropical depression that's formed far out of the Atlantic is moving to the west and could eventually threaten land. Breaking news and analysis at townhall.com. This will probably come as no surprise to many people skeptical of the mass media.
A new Gallup poll shows that Americans' trust of mass media to report the news fully, accurately, and fairly has dropped to its lowest level in Gallup polling history, with only 32% saying they have a great deal or fair amount of trust in the media. This is down 8 percentage points from last year, from its high point in 1976 when 72% of Americans believed the media was truthful and accurate. It has fallen every year, dropping below a majority level in 2007. Republicans have driven this dive, while Democrats' trust in media has declined only marginally.
As correspondent Keith Peters, long-term U.S. mortgage rates rose this week, with the benchmark 30-year loan reaching its highest level since June. The mortgage giant Freddie Mac says today that the average for the 30-year fixed-rate mortgage jumped to 3.50%, up from 3.44% last week. More on these stories at townhall.com.
The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460 with Carl Bott and Trish Clark. Trish
Good
Clark,
morning.
It's Thursday, my Thursday girl.
I know, I love Thursday morning.
5 minutes after the hour of 8 o'clock, 530-605-4567 is our phone number. Get it? Grab your phone, put it in your lap. As we're going to be, I know you're going to have some questions here. We're also streaming worldwide at KCNR1460.com. Hop into our chat room, as many of you have. And, Trish, weather.
60 degrees in downtown Reading as we speak, and we're looking for a high today of 93. Tonight it's going to be a balmy 60, and then on Friday we're looking for a high of 98, a low of 62, I suppose. But I dropped in just before we did this. That didn't work really well. On Saturday we're looking for a high of 98 and a low of 62. It's going to be in the high 90s through the weekend, and that's good because that is not over 100 degrees. Weather
better,
is always brought to
that.
Us by Shasta Gas Propane. It's cool to be a Shasta Gas Propane customer. They're locally and veteran-owned and operated. They give veterans and senior discounts. Give them a call at 365-3793.
This segment of the show brought to you by Alliance Heating and Air. Serving the North State for 25 years, and I can't tell you that there's a better place in town because there isn't. Voted best in the North State, and we use them. We trust them implicitly. They've come in and rescued us during the hottest day of the year when our air conditioner blew out, and they were there when they were needed and fixed it and did a great job. Alliance Heated and Air. Find out how good it can be, and also start getting your heaters checked because it's too late when it's 40 degrees or 30 degrees in the morning and your heater doesn't work. Give them a call at 221-2642 or check out their website at homecomfort.org. Now, this presidential election is in the final race, you could say. And a lot of things have happened on both sides, but one of the major incidents was what happened in Benghazi when the candidate Hillary Clinton was the Secretary of State. And during that time frame, when our Ambassador Chris Stevens was murdered and three other Americans killed during that evening was what really happened, and then the aftermath of it. And the aftermath has led to so many. There's been investigations, there's been recriminations, there's been everything happening. But none of us were kind of in the middle of all this. You kind of read it from the sides. Our guest today, Mark Thompson, was in the middle of this. He was working at the State Department, and he had a lot going on with that, including testimony. And good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Carl.
Hey, I just want to let everybody know, as I've known Mark a long time, since, I think probably 78, 79, when he was was one of the finest lieutenants we ever put through the basic school for the Marine Corps. Back, like I said, I guess it was, 78? 1978, and then you went on to a distinguished career. What was your job in? Tell us a little bit about your job and you, Mark, so people know who you are.
I was working at the State Department. My title was Deputy Coordinator for Operations in the Counterterrorism Bureau. Part of that responsibility is to lead a team on very short notice overseas to respond to terrorist incidents. As a impact on U.S. interests.
examples were the East Africa bombings of 1998, Nairobi and Dar es Salaam, the USS Cole bombing, which both got a lot of press. Things that got less press were hostage recovery efforts that we led on behalf of our U.S. ambassadors. And when we deploy, we are working for the U.S. ambassador, and we take an interagency team of DOD, the intel community, FBI, and others as needed to do a whole government approach and problem solving in the middle of a crisis. And it had proven its worth many, many times up to this point. That's the crisis response side. There's another side of the job that probably isn't relevant to your discussion today.
Okay. Well, it sounds to me like, and how long had you been in that job?
I'd joined the State Department in 96, just as when I was still a Marine. I became a civilian employee of the State Department in 98, and then had been promoted up through into the senior executive service in 08, and I'd had the job a little bit before this particular title, a little bit before I became a senior executive. So in total at the State Department, 18 years, involved with the Fest almost all that time.
Wow.
The my co-host is Trish Clark, by the way, Mark, who's sitting here.
Sure. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Okay, Mark, can you, and so what I wanted people to know is this isn't somebody that just kind of walked in and sat down like the day before. You had plenty of experience in this. You've been out on missions to try to alleviate problems or to help solve problems in the State Department, sent by the State Department.
So give us a rundown of exactly what happened during that whole course of action.
Well, on the 11th September 2012, towards the end of the workday, around 3:40 p.m. Washington time, and I have a lot of very unique people working for me. One of them had coordination and communication with our elements overseas. He reported to me that we had an embassy under attack, as well as the Operations Center in the State Department, which is kind of the clearinghouse for information. The State Department reported that we had a diplomatic facility under assault, and that our ambassador was in the vicinity, and there would be more information to follow. My representative that gave me the initial information also indicated that the intensity of the firefight was increasing, and it was getting worse by the minute. So I monitored that for a while. In the midst of that, probably one of the more chilling pieces of information was we can't find our ambassador. And at that point, I had called the White House. I had a working relationship there with the representatives there to handle counterterrorism, and suggested that the counterterrorism security group convene. The counterterrorism security group is a interagency group convened by the White House that represents all elements of government, all agencies of government that have anything to do with this counterterrorism, and it's basically the assistant secretary level. So that equates to the Assistant Secretary of Counterterrorism for the FBI, for the State Department, for the Intel community, for the Justice Department, the Special Operations people from the Department of Defense, and by policy memorandum, they are to meet to convene and to determine what's going on and what response we should develop for that, for whatever is going on. Again, this had worked before in all the deployments I'd mentioned earlier. In this case, I was told that a group, not the CSG, but a group had met, and they had taken the Foreign Emergency Support Team out of off the menu. And I asked who the representative was. they indicated it was Patrick Kennedy, the Undersecretary of Management, and for the State Department. And then I said, okay, fine, I'll go within the State Department and ask further questions. I connected with that office, Undersecretary for Management, and I was told that he was he felt as though this was not our mission. Countered with it's exactly our mission, and we should not be sitting here. In the meantime, I had calls from special operations people in the military, the Federal Bureau of Investigation, all wanting to know when we were going to leave. They ended the presumption that we were going to be deployed, and I told them, you know, that had been taken off the table. Again, got worse and worse. I was able to monitor virtually what the activity that target were that night, the enemy's target, and found that the folks were moving from the diplomatic facility to the annex, and then the annex came under fire, very accurate fire, both direct fire and mortar fire, and at that point, some point in there, we knew Sean Stevens had died at the facility, and then we later found out that our two CO contractors had died, and then again, people were pretty focused on what was going on with the ambassador. We didn't have any information at that time. By the time I left at 2 a.m, we had determined that he had been murdered, and that we were trying to recover his body. At that point, I turned the monitoring of this over to a colleague of mine. I went home, got a little sleep, came back at 6:30 the next morning, and kind of the rest is history, I guess.
So you were watching it from the very beginning when you got the first. And so the timeline on this, Mark, then, is it started at approximately what time?
Between 3:30 and 4 p.m. Washington time, so, which would have been 9:30 and 10 in Libya.
Right. So then you were monitoring it then till at least 2 o'clock in the morning. Did you say?
And, yes.
Okay. What was the feeling in the State Department during this time frame? I mean, because this was an ambassador. I mean, this was your guy's kind of job, you know, and he's missing, and now you're hearing he's been killed. The annex is under attack. I mean, what were people saying then?
That's what was probably still the mystery to me to this day is, you know, what were you thinking? This is the team that's designed to do this. The military was not allowed to deploy. And they had crisis response forces poised in southern Europe. They were not allowed to deploy. And the short answer to your question is I don't know what they were thinking in the State Department, but I think we need to probably just focus on three things that should have happened that evening. And I should say two things that evening and one beforehand. First, you know, the failure of security. Not because diplomatic security agents didn't do their job, but because we put an ambassador in a position where the security needed to be heightened at the same time that the threat had been going up. And it's been in the press about the number of the events that had happened in and around Benghazi against Western facilities, against our facilities, against British facilities. And so the threat picture had been ticking up considerably, and our security posture has been ticking down considerably.
Well, that was one of the questions, is that they were asking for more security, and the security was being reduced. Is that true?
That is true. And then there's the issue of, you know, well, the ambassador had to get out there and do his job, and he really felt strongly about that. And ambassadors are kind of like, you know, ship's captains in the Navy, they have a great deal of latitude with their activities, and so he did what he did. But once the attack got underway, you know, no one knew, and you know, people try to kind of armchair quarterback this in kind of a strange way in that, well, we couldn't have gotten there in time anyway. Well, you didn't know you couldn't get there in time because you didn't know how long the assault would last. So it started to, and between the two annexes, it went on for many hours. Attacking both annexes.
Yeah,
so
was it 13 hours, launching, something like that?
Yeah, launching a force from Europe would have been prudent. And even during testimony, our testimony, Greg Hicks, who was the deputy chief of mission that evening, second in charge to the ambassador, said even a low flyover of jets from Aviano Air Base would have scattered people. And again, that's armchair quarterbacking, and that's coming from somebody that's not a military guy. But the point remains is we didn't make a concerted effort to get there and do what we were trained to do. And then the third thing is, my team, our team, the Foreign Emergency Support Team, should have been launched very early. We're required to be ready and on the aircraft within hours of the decision to launch, and we could have started a very thorough investigation, coordinated with the Libyans, coordinated with the ambassador, coordinated with the other countries, to ensure that we brought these folks to justice and got the evidence we needed to get them either hunted down or brought to trial, and that was not accomplished either.
And was there any effort ever to send a team over there to thoroughly investigate by the State Department?
Well, 17 days later, the FBI did a very quick stop at the location. 17 days, and to quote Trey Gowdy, "No crime scene gets better with age." And in this case, 17 days later, CNN had already somehow acquired the ambassador's diary by that time, and they'd been there. News crews had been there, but U.S. government representatives had not been there since the brave people that pulled these people out that night were there on the morning of 12 September.
Now, was there any, and then, of course, you know, with these 13 hours and the time it took, I wondered, you know, when we were talking about this, why, you know, jets weren't launched or where the teams were, that now it's coming out that Marine security guard teams, security teams were told to put uniform on, take uniform off, put uniform back on several times, and then never were launched. Is that just, was that true, or is that just one of those urban myths?
I'm not familiar enough to that to give an authoritative response.
Okay.
But I would just say that the Marines' duty in this case would have been to reinforce our embassy, which was the only truly diplomatic facility, official diplomatic facility in Libya, and they should have been launched in there to reinforce in the event that the violence moved west from Benghazi to Tripoli. So I'd heard those same stories about, you know, whether they wore a uniform or whether they didn't wear a uniform, but not an expert on that particular point.
Okay. You said there was, indications that there were things happening in Libya and that the danger was, the threat level was going up. After the attack, the immediate response was it was caused by this video. Was there any indication in the intelligence before that this video or after that this video was a direct that the attack was a direct result of this video?
An unadulterated no. And add on to that your experience as a Marine infantry officer and my experience as a Marine infantry officer. The annex to where our people fled once the diplomatic facility was attacked, and the enemy knew that. The enemy knew what our contingency plans were there, and that is, if we get hit at this location, we're going to move to the next location, which was the annex. The annex, the two SEALs that were murdered that night,
came under mortar fire. And one of those, and the top of the facility they were defending, and they were on the roof of that evening, got a direct mortar hit on the third round. So one round was long, one round was short, the third round hit. As you know, that would have taken a lot of prior planning. It would have had to, they would have had to do the math problem to ensure that a high altitude indirect fire weapon landed where they wanted it to. And even with the third round hitting, it represented a lot of planning in order to make that round hit its target that quickly. So I voiced that rather early when people started talking about the video, and that was ignored.
Yeah, I can imagine that. They eventually had at the end of this, there was a militia group that came up to help rescue the people out of the annex. Is that true?
There was a Libyan force that helped. I mean, to be fair to all parties, a lot of Libyans wanted us back there and respected what Ambassador Stevens and the team there was trying to achieve to bring some peace and stability to Libya. Those were the people that that helped. There was also a group that might have changed its allegiances that same night that we thought were on our side, and turned into either allowing the attackers to get close that night before they lit off their rounds, or perhaps even joined them. That, I think, yet to be determined.
Yeah, and that was one of the security teams that was supposedly around the residence where Stevens was, if I remember reading that. Okay. Our guest is Mark Thompson. He was formerly in the, he was in the State Department working in the counterterrorist side of it, 18 years at the State Department, a retired Marine officer, had been out on all types of missions. And when Benghazi came, this was the type of mission that they did. And then even in the aftermath, they would have been launched to do an investigation to see what, you know, see what really happened, to make sure it doesn't happen again. And they were never launched. Has just categorically said that there was no video. It wasn't the video. This thing had been planned. In reality, if that Libyan group had not come to the annex, it could have ended even worse. Is that correct?
I am not certain of that evening. I know that we had people that launched out of Tripoli that night, that in other places that were told not to go but went anyway. There were two people that night, two Americans, servicemen that night, that eventually were awarded the Navy Cross and the Distinguished Service Cross, respectively, from the Navy Marine Corps and from the Army, the second highest awards for valor that night. You normally don't, you never get an award for valor at that level because you interrupted a protest. So, I think that speaks for itself.
Yeah. Our guest, again, is Mark Thompson. Mark, we're going to take a quick break here, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk now in the second part of the show about what happened in the aftermath of this, when everybody is trying to run for cover and throw a dust screen up in the air, and then when you saw what your mission was to tell the truth. We'll be right back in about 3 minutes.
Hi, I'm Chuck Kinney, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. There's a joke around our company that our propane is better than other companies' propane. The fact is that most propane sold in the North State is manufactured in the same refineries in the Bay Area, so there's really no difference. However, there can be a big difference between propane companies. When you call Shasta Gas, you will be greeted by a friendly, knowledgeable customer service representative that will answer your questions or concerns and even give you an approximate time that your delivery will be there if you need to know. If you want, you can also talk to the owner, me. There may also be a big difference in prices between companies. Our motto at Shasta Gas is our customers are warm friends. So for safety, service, and savings, and to experience this difference, give us a call at 365-3793. That's 365-3793.
Hi, this is Linda Bott. Like many working women, I have a hectic schedule. My daily radio show, stage performances, and time with Carl leave almost no time to focus on myself. And I know a lot of us are in that same situation. We need me time to maintain mind, body, and spirit. And that's where Wellgate Sports Club really shines. I love the aquatic training program at Wellgate Sports Club. Kathleen Cowling's Aqua Aerobics focuses on cardiac training through water resistance and buoyancy that features safe, low-impact movements. Wellgate Sports Club's saltwater pool is a unique way to get back to my body, feeling muscle groups grow stronger. Kathleen at Wellgate Sports Club helped me to find my new limits, and they can help you too. Call Wellgate Sports Club today at 768-1205, or you can check out schedule information online at wellgatesportsclub.com. At Wellgate, self-care is the best form of health care. Wellgate Sports Club, Eureka Way at Court in Reading.
Is there anything more relaxing on a warm summer day than your patio? Budget Blinds is locally owned and operated and knows how to make your outdoor space in our area as comfortable as possible. Jerry and the whole Budget Blinds staff offers proper installation of patio shades and exterior window coverings, including solar shades, which can help you save on costly energy bills. Budget Blinds Reading Red Bluff also offers a variety of breathable fabrics and exterior window coverings, including window screens. Don't wait any longer. Give your patio or porch an upgrade with stylish, sturdy patio window coverings. Enjoy shades that gently filter passing breezes while perfectly complementing your outdoor theme. You'll relax on your patio or porch knowing you've got the perfect fit and highest quality service.
My goal for our customer here at Budget Blinds is when we walk out of the house, it's nicer than it was when we walked in. The customer got exactly what they wanted. If you're in need of custom window covering, give Budget Blinds a call today, 226-9027, or visit us on the web, budgetblinds.com.
KCNR, 1460 AM, the most local programming in Northern California.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Thursday, September the 15th. It is 8:31 in the morning. I'm here with Trish Clark.
And it's interesting show.
Yeah, morning. 60 degrees going up to 93 today, the low of 60 tonight. Weather reports brought to you by Shasta Gas Propane. This portion of the show, of course, brought to you by a veteran-owned business, Cypress Square Barbershop, man's last stronghold, best place in the world, get a haircut. Our guest is Mark Thompson. Mark has worked at the State Department for 18 years, is a retired Marine, then went to work for the State Department, is working in their counterterrorism offices, has been deployed throughout the world in tight spots going to help alleviate problems they've had out there to do investigations on incidents that have happened. He was involved in the Benghazi, I don't know what else to call this, but the Benghazi
debacle
in the sense of lack of security, lack of response and all this. He saw this, he watched this happen, and then he was involved in the investigation afterwards. Mark, good morning and welcome back.
Good morning.
Okay, Mark, after this had happened, of course, the investigation started about how could this happen, when, you know, what was the lead up to it, what was, you know, everything that had to do with it. And then you were, your name came up, is that correct?
Yes. A colleague of mine suggested the committee reach out to me. They did. I talked to them informally, and then they asked me to go on the record with the unfortunate title of whistleblower, which has connotations I don't care for, but it's now a legal term. So, and then, you know, it went from there.
Okay, so...
And this is the committee that Trey Gowdy was the chairman of before the House?
No, it was ISSA. It was Darrell ISSA, the Government Oversight, House Government Oversight Committee.
Oh, okay.
And Darrell ISSA was the chairman. Gowdy was a member of that,
And then Gowdy became the Benghazi special committee chairman.
Okay.
Now, so you were called to testify. Were you? Did the State Department know that you were being? Obviously, they did know you were being called.
They found out on the 6th of May when a letter from ISSA to the Secretary of State informed them of that.
Okay, and then...
And I testified, I'm sorry, that was on the 4th of May, and I testified on the 8th of May.
What was their response to that? Did they come to you?
Before the letter came out, I told my boss at the time. He personally was very supportive. I doubt if anyone else was.
Okay. So then you were called in front of the committee, and what did they? What was the line of questioning on that?
Well, the orchestrators of that hearing, as I understood it, really wanted to get a complete picture, and the complete picture really started with Greg Hicks, the deputy chief of mission, who had been demoted, relegated to, you know, basically the broom closet. Also, a former regional security officer from diplomatic security who testified about the reduced security while he was there. And then he'd left before the attack. He'd transferred out. And then I kind of completed the picture of what was the response and what wasn't the response and what could have we responded with that night. And so, you know, mine was focused on why I... What our capabilities were, who comprised our team, the fact that a similar incident when you blow up an embassy in Nairobi, Kenya, in August of 1998, yes, that's dangerous too. One of the comebacks was, well, it was too dangerous to send us, and obviously our efforts that night probably would have been to go into Tripoli, reinforce the embassy there, and get our activities originated from there, from the person in charge at the time, which would have been Greg Hicks. And those are the kind of themes. And the other theme was, irrespective of your service, irrespective of your part of government, irrespective of, you know, anything, if you're an American and you're in harm's way and you're there for the purpose of serving our government overseas, then you deserve to know that somebody will come get you and help you when you're in a bad situation, and I told them that we failed to do that.
That we failed to do that, that nothing really was done that night at all.
There, well, from the United States, there was nothing
right,
done.
Right.
Inside Libya and the special operations guys that were already there doing other things in Libya, they certainly did a lot, and they risked their lives saving lives that night and risk their careers for that matter doing that. So I think the distinction has to be made outside of Libya, inside of Libya. Inside of Libya, a lot of things were done, but more things had to be done outside to really help, and that wasn't done.
When the facility was taken, it wasn't the embassy itself. But
no.
did they have capabilities of printing passports or travel visas or things like that from there?
No. This was a facility that was put in that part of the country to enable our government to reach out to that part of Libya. Going back again in Marine Corps tradition, the Barbary Pirates came from that part of Libya.
Right.
Presley O'Bannon and the Mameluke sword and all those traditions of the Marine Corps originated there. And even if you go back to the foreign fighters that went into Iraq after we had reduced our presence there, the number two or the second largest ethnicity or nationality to go into Iraq after the Saudis, who led the way, were the Libyans, and they all came from this part of Libya. Sirte, Benghazi, Darna, and a certain tribe that has been doing this for centuries. This being raising Cain throughout the world, in the case of the Barbary Pirates, going down the high seas of the Mediterranean and hijacking ships and so forth. So, this was a unique part of Libya to have a diplomatic facility in. And if we were going to do that, then we had to pony up the requisite security to do it.
Which we didn't.
Correct.
Now, from what I understand, Chris Stevens had put in many requests to enhance the security and getting more people in there and was turned down. Is that true?
He did, and just as importantly in my mind, as the regional security people, the diplomatic security people, Greg Hicks was recently on one of the networks, and he indicated that it really took 12 people to run that facility if you were going to have someone moving around, because you had to have people with Chris Stevens, with the ambassador while he moved, a large contingent, and then you had to have a decent contingent back at the facility. And they had reduced their numbers to the extent that you could not leave the facility and protect the ambassador and still have people back at the facility to protect it. And he was on the news shows this week, reminding people of that.
I think one of the things I want people to understand too is what happened to a man who's kind of devoted his life to our country, both as a Marine and then working in the State Department to help, to go places that are dangerous and to help. When you went in and after you testified, what happened to Mark Thompson after that?
nothing initially. I was committed to going back to work the next day and doing what I did the day before and doing it as well as I could do.
And by the way, you'd been promoted, up to the SES level, which a lot of people don't realize. If it was a military, an SES level is like a general officer. So you're up in that special executive. Senior executive service up there. You have come on up through the, so you know what you're doing. You're a proven quantity. So it's not like you're somebody that was sitting in a back office for 10 years, if I can say that.
Initially nothing. So now we're talking the summer of 2013. I testified on May 8th, 2013.
Uh-huh.
A new head of counterterrorism in the State Department came in February. I was told in April that first off, about a year went by, about 8 months went by, and then when my first evaluation came due, or midterm evaluation, I was given a piece of paper that equated me something akin to Benedict Arnold. It lied about my performance. They lied about what I did. At that point, I decided to push back. By that time, what I had done and my influence in the office had demonstrably been reduced. Was there anything I could put a metric to? Not really easily. FEST had been put on the back burner. This isn't really important. We do policy. We do, reach out to nations and learn how to be nice to people and that sort of thing. But the role of our office and me as an individual was reduced. When this piece of paper came to me, that was demonstrably, showing what they were trying to, achieve, with respect to me. Soon after that, I was told I was going to be demoted, not demoted out of SES, but the title that I had, and I would no longer be a Deputy Assistant Secretary, but I would be an Office Director, which, to your audience, doesn't mean anything really. But it's kind of like going from foreman to just pound this nail and this board all day long, kind of relegation.
You're not charged. So, you're not in charge of anything anymore. You're just kind of a worker.
Well, I was in charge of people, but the title and I was replaced by somebody who was not experienced or knew the business, and I was, and that person was friends with the person who was my boss, So it was becoming a setup. And at that point, I started taking official action against that through the government process. And then when the government process didn't seem to be achieving anything after 6 months, I went and sought my own legal counsel, and they achieved what I needed to achieve, and that was get my name cleared, get the report cleared, and get my title back. And in exchange for that, the State Department wanted me to quote unquote retire, and I retired.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting?
And
I mean that in such a sarcastic way, that here you go, you see something, you've got this experience level, they ask you what happened, this is what we saw, there was no indication of this, no indication of that, this is what happened before and after, and you tell the truth, and because the truth wasn't following the same route as the
rest of the liars
that were testifying, then you get punished for it. And I, like I said, I've known Mark for a long time. I knew him back as a second lieutenant, but I think we ran into each other once, maybe, after that.
Yeah, I think in Camp Pendleton.
Yeah, Camp Pendleton. Yeah, in the 90s there, and then I heard from him for other reasons here a few weeks ago.
Mark, monetarily, that certainly probably you had to go out and get legal counsel on your own, which you obviously had to pay for.
Correct.
Were you ever reimbursed for any of that in the court action?
Yes, I was reimbursed.
And under your retirement, you were able to retire with all benefits that were due you after that time in the U.S. government service?
Yes.
Well, good.
So, that was part of the deal.
now you're living in a Midwestern state.
Yep.
On a farm with a place with your grandkids and all that. I don't feel like I'm an old guy. I mean, because I do a lot of things. But when I see one of the second lieutenants I put through school, he's talking about his grandkids. It's kind of like, grandkids.
Yeah, I don't know all those people who continue to get older, but we don't.
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel kind of sorry for Mark. He's got grandkids. Look at me. I mean, I'm still the same guy. Hey, okay, Mark, but your whole experience with this, did you feel like it was a cover-up from the beginning about what happened, trying to say, oh, no, we had done everything right, and this was a riot caused by a video? I mean, they went out for a week and for talking points. Hillary told the parents of these people, oh, it was caused by this video, and we'll make this guy pay. I mean, when that was going on, what did you think about that and your colleagues?
Well, yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned colleagues because I wasn't the only one. But it was, senior government officials often want to not fess up when something just goes horribly bad, and in this case, it was, people talk about Watergate. It wasn't a crime; it was a cover up. Well, four people died in Benghazi, needlessly died, and nobody wanted to say, well, yeah, we made some bad calls there. If that had been done, we wouldn't even be talking about this right now. And so that idea of integrity is the first element of leadership is still true. And it was the dearth of leadership, and it was the expanse of blame somebody else. It wasn't me, type of thing, and lament the loss of life, but yet not take responsibility for it. And that's what really still will bother me for quite some time, I guess.
Mark, did you see afterwards that, externally these things were being said, but internally, Was there things saying, okay, we'll never, this is what we're going to have to do to make sure this never happens again? I mean, was there anything put in place that you know of? I mean, that said, okay, for whatever reason, we didn't protect him. He was murdered. This is what we're going to do for the future.
Well, the inside the State Department, there's always, when there's a significant loss of property or injury or life in the State Department, they convene an Accountability Review Board, ARB. That, funny, that thing is convened by the Undersecretary of Management, the aforementioned Pat Kennedy. It was chaired by Pickering and Mullen, Admiral Mullen and Ambassador Pickering. Pickering had been an ambassador several times over, had been the Undersecretary of State as well. He had worked for Boeing now, I think. Mullen, obviously chairman of Joint Chiefs. I was astounded by their findings. I was absolutely astounded when there was an ARB after the Nairobi bombing of 98, there were specific things that they said needed to be done. Ironically, I had visited that embassy before it was bombed and had been basically shellacked by the ambassador saying her security, not that I'm the head of security, but their security was horrible, and she wanted it fixed. 6 months later, I get back there, and I see a hole in the ground, which was the embassy. So what came out in some of these hearings, and I believe it was Trey Gowdy again, that said, you know, here's the findings of the ARB from Nairobi. Here are the findings from the ARB in Benghazi. They look a lot the same. Nothing was really done. We didn't learn from... and we had 12 people murdered in Nairobi in an instant. And then just the fact that we didn't hold anybody accountable. We hold people accountable that were way down the chain of people in the State Department. Greg Hicks and another individual from inside Near East Asia Bureau. Nobody spoke of me, but that was being done on the sly. But we never held anybody accountable, like the Undersecretary of Management, who would have had to sign off on who diplomatic security works for. And we fired the head of diplomatic security, but he was being told what to do too. So, you know, those are kind of the frustrating aspects of it, I guess.
Mark, I don't know how to answer the question. Ask the question other than just ask it. Hillary Clinton certainly had some vulnerability here, which has been totally whitewashed.
Is that a statement or a question?
Well, obviously, is that a fact? And should there have been? All she said was, you know, she didn't know anything, and nobody told her anything, and she didn't get any of his messages.
Well, you know. Just to be clear, every cable, which is otherwise called a message, official message out of the State Department, every cable that originates from the State Department has the Secretary of State's name at the bottom of it. So when people say, well, she did this and her name was at the bottom of a cable, that is truly pro forma. But she can't have it both ways either. If Chris Stevens was a close personal friend of hers, which she has espoused, then she should have been listening and she should have been paying close attention to a place that we supported in its overthrow of Gaddafi. And the overthrow of Gaddafi, you could argue, opened up a huge hornet's nest that Gaddafi was at least keeping inside the nest, not democratically, albeit, but it was not metastasizing as it is now. She should have paid closer attention to that. Her senior staff should have paid closer attention to that. And for reasons yet to be determined, we didn't want people in there poking around to find out why.
But if he was a close personal friend of hers, one would have thought that he would have gone directly to her. I mean, he certainly had that ability if he was a close personal friend.
Yeah, and you know, maybe in those 30,000 emails, maybe there's one in there from Chris Stevens. I don't know.
You know,
but what I've seen of the emails and their redactions, you know, they've redacted the weather forecast in some of those emails. I mean, it's gotten almost that
ridiculous.
You know, Mark, you just said something. You said for the reasons that perhaps haven't come out. Our chat room is going crazy, as you can probably imagine right now. One of the things said something about arms transfers going on.
That's a theory that I cannot confirm. I mean, not because I ever heard about it beforehand, but I heard about it afterwards.
Uh-huh.
I think in open press they've talked about trying to retrieve SAMs, surface to air missiles, that and trying to retrieve those so that they weren't in the hands of our potential adversary. And there's things like that, but there's much deeper and more Machiavellian and conspiratorial stories out there that I've only read about and I didn't have any information on when I was working for the government.
Okay. Well, that's and that's a good answer. I mean, we can all read things, but you know, unless you're right in the middle of it, and sometimes, as you know, you're in the middle of things, and you don't know you're in the middle of things because you're so many different compartments in there.
Yeah.
Hey, we have a person who wants to ask you a question. You open for that?
Sure.
Okay, Nick, what you do? We got. Okay, Nick, we've got a you got a question for Mark?
Nick's gone.
Okay, sorry, Nick. All right, never mind. Hey, Mark, I just want to thank you a lot for being on today. Now, even though you're out in the Midwest and on a farm with your grandkids, you're moving back into the work. Is that correct?
Eventually, yeah. I've been asked to give some speeches and talks. This past Sunday, it was quite an honor to speak at the county courthouse on the lawn on the anniversary of 9/11, when our small community here paid tribute to first responders, whether they were civilians or the military. Police, firemen, EMTs, and so forth. So I was able to do that. And then some school speaking, and then in March I think I'll be speaking down at the state capitol on an issue as well, on leadership of all things. So, yeah, in that respect, I hope to get back to leadership is really what I want to get into, and I hope to stay in, because I've obviously old Marines grow up that way.
Oh yeah, you know, Mark, it's you got you did your job, and as a Marine, and then as in the State Department, the fact is that you were asked to testify to what you saw, and you did it truthfully, and then you paid for it. Would you've ever when you think back now? What do you think? Would you maybe not have done that?
No regrets.
Yeah, I didn't think you would, knowing you. Okay, you know what, Mark? Thanks so much for being with us. And you know what? We ought to see if we can't get Mark out here sometime and have him as a guest speaker.
That would be great.
Wouldn't that be great? Yeah. You know, I bet we could fill up the Cascade Theater.
I think you're absolutely right. And, Mark, I just want to say thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
But not a good thank you from the U.S. government, but I think it's interesting for the people certainly here to hear what actually happens. You know, a lot of times people want to know, well, why don't they step forward? Well, why doesn't somebody do something? The people that do step forward, this is what happens to them, and I think there's probably more instances of this happening where people have stepped forward, and we don't hear their story like we've just heard yours. So we appreciate you coming on, and thank you for your service.
Thank you for talking to me. Take care.
You bet, Mark. Take care, and I'll stay in touch with you, okay?
All right.
Take care out there. Okay.
Wow.
Mark Thompson, former retired Marine, former State Department SES, who was in the thick of things when it came to examining what happened, like he said in Nairobi, going there 6 months before the attack, and the ambassador saying, hey, we are vulnerable here. Now, he didn't handle security. That was but he went back to the reports, and 6 months later, the whole place blows up, as you remember.
Yeah, yeah.
And so their job was to go there and to what happened in Libya. Already you can tell, at least in my feelings, when that went down with Chris Stevens,
yeah,
They were already starting to cover their butts.
Yeah.
Right then, they were already starting. We don't want guys in there that this is what they do for a living.
And so they wouldn't send in the team that was set up by the State Department
to do this.
To do this exact
to go
work.
In and do that. And instead, 17 days later, the FBI gets there after CNN has already gone through and swept the place. Plus, all the other people going in there stealing things. It's ludicrous. And the whole 13 hours of that battle, to say we couldn't have moved forces in there is ridiculous. And, and I've seen it before. You could send jets. They came in at rooftop level, hitting their afterburners. I mean, it's going to slow things down.
That's
one of the resolutions. But more people coming out of Tripoli and, you know, this whole thing. But
the team that was right there that went in after the fact when they weren't supposed to, and some of them were killed. We had him here in Reading. I've forgotten his name.
Tonto Peronto.
Yeah.
Was here.
But you know, the frustrating part of this is that the people listening to this whole show today already believe this. How in the world do we get all those people who are supporting Hillary Clinton for president to hear this and understand what actually happened?
Well, if we're going to send this, put this out on Facebook, and we're going to send it out to a lot of people.
Well,
and you've got to share it, everybody. Just share this when you get it on your Facebook or come here and take a copy of it off our archives and send it to people. That's the way to do it.
I don't understand how anybody could be supporting her for president.
You know.
This is one of the things. Yeah. We talked about health earlier. We talk about this.
Tomorrow we've got Wild Kingdom in here, and I'm not talking about politicians. I'm talking about the real Wild Kingdom. Everybody have a great day.
KCNR, Shasta Redding, joining SRN Radio News in process.
Hillary Clinton several times over the last few days, and she's been cleared to return to the campaign trail today after a bout with pneumonia. The list of drugs that she's currently taking, Coumadin, a blood thinner, Levaquin, an antibiotic, something for hypothyroidism, an antihistamine, and also B12. Meanwhile, he is 70 years old, but Donald Trump says when he looks in a mirror, he sees someone half that age. He told the Dr. Oz show that when you're running for president, you have an obligation to be healthy. Dr. Oz has invited both candidates on his show.
We're to try to help bring some clarity to the health of the candidates, which is why, again, I'm hoping Secretary Clinton will accept the invitation, but I'm glad she released her record because we're a much more informed country today than we were yesterday about the health of our candidates, which makes me feel good.
Trump also told Fox and Friends today that he weighs 236 pounds, making him a little overweight for his height, something he says he's certainly not proud of.